had a panic moment the other day, Tony.
What's that?
Sheer panic. I just got out of the shower.
I can see why you panic.
Oh, Jesus. How long has it been? And in my hallway, I have like a full human-sized mirror at the end of it. And I was, as I was walking towards it, I was looking at myself and I was like, is my hairline receding?
Well, almost certainly.
It's not.
That will happen.
It's not. I just have an intense widow's peak, just like I've always had. But when my hair is wet, it is much worse.
But is it?
Is what?
Is it receding? 'Cause
I'm pretty sure it isn't.
I don't know, from this angle.
The camera's up, Tony. You know, I honestly can't tell you.
I used to have hair on these spots, so.
I used to have hair down to here.
That shit will happen.
I honestly can't. Like, I do feel like I lose a lot of hair, but also, like, I have a lot of hair.
Yeah.
So I think, like, in terms of the percentage, it's probably, like, just the normal.
Yeah, the
attrition. Hair attrition.
Monica has very, very long hair and a lot of it, and it is astonishing how much random loose hair is found around the house. And it's mm-hmm. like, I am actually not clear how it can possibly grow enough to match this, but okay, it mm-hmm. does.
Yep.
That was the big panic this week.
Was that you might sorry.
It wasn't the big panic this week.
Yeah, I was going to say, I read your posts. I know you've got plenty more work concerns that outrate your widow's peak concerns.
Work's work, man.
It is.
Yeah.
I just learned that my work is opening up a whole new IT center in Poland. Which, you know, I am not.
Well, missed opportunity, I think.
But somebody posted, so they always have an internal, you know, company site where they do all their announcements, and you can post, anyone in the company can post like responses to it. And most of them tend to be along the brown nosing, you know, ooh, great news. Ooh, we're so happy for you. One of my friends who's actually a fellow nerd and a gamer posted Germans moving into Poland is still not a good look.
Wow. Wow.
Oh, that's I mean, it's not
it's not at all. That's fair.
Wow. I appreciated that comment. I think a few other people did too. I'm not sure that our German board of directors will if they ever saw it, but whatever. This guy, like many of us kind of long ago, gave up having any shits about getting called on the carpet.
Oh, it's so, my work anniversary.
Oh.
Ew.
How many years does that make?
Six? Seven? Seven? I don't know. Yeah, I don't actually know what, like, companies' obsessions are with these social media sites, like, these internal social media sites. Like, what...
Ugh.
Oh,
what do I want with a like more closed system LinkedIn?
Yeah,
regular
we have
LinkedIn
one.
Is worthless.
We have one. We use the Microsoft Yammer.
Yup.
It's gross.
That is disgusting.
So my company, being overly bloated as it is, uses for internal communication Yammer, Slack, which is decent. Teams, Microsoft Teams.
We use that.
Teams sucks.
Skype.
Skype also sucks.
So communications are just spread completely around, and it's like it. The one that matters depends on who you're talking to. Mm-hmm. Like the real executives, they love Yammer. They love their Twitter knockoff. And then all the IT people are like, if you want to talk to me on Slack.
We have Google Apps, and it was real convenient because, like, if you needed somebody, you could just IM them from your email. and it was very convenient. And then they did this whole thing where they're like, well, Slack is popular, so we should implement Slack. And like, no one needed that because there wasn't a problem with the way we were communicating. So they implemented Slack and then turned off the instant messaging in Gmail for a reason.
Oh.
I'm not quite sure what the reason was, but they did that. And then for some reason, it mysteriously was turned back on and no one talks about it. So we just avoid using Slack, which is awful.
Yeah. The last place I worked used a third-party IMing platform. And it was, I mean, it got some moderate use, but it was just because we were a development team. The best use it got was when someone would leave their workstation open, but because of our, because of all the SOX compliance and other compliance that we had to go through because we made shopping cart software.
Yep.
If somebody left their workstation open, you just open up their IM client and then message the group. Hey, what does everybody want for lunch? I'm buying today. What does everybody want from Jimmy John's? I'm buying today. And then you'd walk away.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing was, is you couldn't complain about it. You just had to buy lunch for everybody because you were the moron that fucked up and left your workstation open. And it was like that peer punishment was so much lighter than what would happen if that got back to HR.
Like the actual security hit that you would take.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
When you leave your seat, Control Alt Delete.
Windows L.
Mm-hmm. I like the Control Alt Delete.
Yeah.
Because I don't think my keyboard has a Windows key on it.
Oh. Yeah, the Control Alt Delete got drilled into me hard when I first started at the job I'm on right now, because the same kind of stuff would happen with us too. It was a major security thing, and yeah, if you walked away and it was unlocked, you could guarantee that you were unwittingly sending messages out of some kind or another.
Oh yeah. When I worked at the bank, if somebody did that, we would do things like change the Windows background. I had this exec that I left on the network, and it changed the pointer to the middle finger randomly. it would randomly change the pointer to the middle finger. So do that and set that up on people.
I do remember we had one employee who would not learn the lesson. Like we sent off embarrassing messages. We, you know, just talked to them about it like adult human beings, and they just would not get it. They kept walking away. So one time they did it again. We're like, okay, we're gonna at least make sure they remember what happened this time. We rotated the orientation of their monitor 90 degrees so it was on its side. We swapped the left right functionality on the mouse buttons. We inverted the directional aspect of the mouse.
Yep. These all sound familiar, Eric. At one point, back in the Windows 95 days, you'd do a shutdown, and because you had to still hard power off your machine, you'd get a screen that says it's now safe to shut down your computer. I edited the bitmap and changed the T, moved the T, so it would say it's not safe to shut off your computer, and left that on people's machines. It was so great because you'd see people looking at it and it's like, what? What's wrong with this? Why am I not allowed to shut off my computer? Harmless chicanery. All right. Does anybody have any suggestions for a movie for next week?
Well, we haven't even done this week.
Nomadland just won.
Nomadland did just win.
So,
but is that available for streaming? For
yeah, that's what I was wondering.
I honestly don't know.
Let's see.
It is. According
I mean,
to this,
I know it's available.
According to this, if you're subscribed to Hulu, you can stream it there.
Well.
Hot diggity dog.
I guess that's a win for me. being subscribed to Hulu and all.
Yep.
All right. Well, let's do that next week.
Yeah, we can keep our streak of Oscar-worthy movies going with not a break.
Boy, and Daniel Kaluuya. Yeah.
I said the guy was going to win.
Yeah. That was a good. That was good. I'm glad to see that Emerald Fennell won for screenplay for Promising Young Woman. I was pleasantly surprised by that. Hey, this is Tony.
This is Eric.
And this is David.
And we are the Backseat Producers. And tonight we're talking about another Oscar-worthy movie. No. Mortal Kombat, the 2021 edition. I do not remember the original.
I did not go back and watch
really?
It.
Really? I saw it in the theaters. But
so did I.
That's all I can remember about it, that I did see it in a theater. Like, I honestly just don't remember much about that movie.
Was terrible.
Eric, what did you think of the new version?
Mortal Kombat! I thought that the new version inevitably, as it was bound to, failed to live up to the bizarre combination of accepted ludicrousness and pure adrenaline that the original movie had, particularly when watched in the theater. It was a fine fight movie. It made no sense. It did not attempt to have any logical consistency. So I had fun watching it. It was not the painful garbage fire that the second Mortal Kombat movie, like Mortal Kombat Annihilation or whatever, was. But it was not a good movie, no. And I had a number of specific issues with it that I'm sure we'll get into. But
David, what did you think of this movie?
This was a bad movie. That is my high level review.
My high level review is I expected a big, dumb, violent action movie, and it met that expectation.
Hit that mark.
It did everything I expected it to do, which it didn't. I didn't expect it to do a whole lot, and it did all of those things. The milestone for me for this movie was the fact that this is the first time that I've been inside a theater, inside a movie theater, over a year.
Yep.
Actually, just over 13 months. So, which is, I think, the longest I've gone without stepping foot in a theater probably since I was a small child and had no control of when I could go to a movie.
All of that is 100% accurate.
Yep.
And I actually didn't get that experience. I watched it from home.
Yeah, I mean, we talked about it, but last week Holden said, you know, I would really love to see that movie in a theater. And he had his big play weekend his musical weekend this last weekend. So I thought, you know what?
Fuck it.
Let's go. You know, just a kind of a blow off steam from that for him. So we use Fandango to get our movie tickets. And when you buy 4 tickets, you get a $5 credit. Apparently Fandango has been every month advancing that credit to me again from the last movie that our family went to see. So I've had a $5 credit sitting out there for a year. That's supposed to expire in like a month, but every month they just keep advancing it. So because it's Tuesday and there's $5 movies on Tuesdays still, we spent a total of $5 to walk into the theater for the two of us. That was on the gigantic screen.
That's less than I pay for HBO Max a month.
Yep.
Yep.
It was worth it just to go back into a theater and see this big stupid movie on a gigantic screen.
Yeah. The theater trip was worth the $5.
Yeah, it really was.
The rest of the experience was lackluster.
It really was.
Okay, can we talk? Let's just start with the best part of the movie, and then we can talk about how the rest of it sucked. The best part of the movie was obviously, it was fucking Kano.
Kano was the best part of the movie.
He was the best part of the fucking movie.
I did see that the actor's been hospitalized for having with back injuries for having to carry the whole movie.
Also, like, have you ever watched House of Lies? That's the fucking nerd guy from House of Lies.
Oh wow.
There were a couple of people who buffed out for this movie. So Mechad Brooks, who played Jack, he plays Jimmy Olsen in the Supergirl TV show. And for a second, I didn't recognize him because I was like, wait a minute.
Yeah.
What the hell?
Is he padding his bare arms? Because my God, that dude looks so jacked compared to what he normally looks like. Yeah, I'm right there with you. That was ridiculous.
Honestly, if there was one thing I think they did a great job of, I liked pretty much all of the casting. I liked the way they got everybody to play their roles. Kano obviously stole the show.
Oh yeah, 100%.
And I'm an old school, like I am an old school Mortal Kombat fan, and he was always one of my favorite go-to guys because he's so absurd and out of place with these like gods and martial artist masters, and he's just this Australian asshole with a cybernetic eye. Okay. But yeah, honestly, the fact that they got so much of the casting so right and did so many cool things with the characters that are from this franchise highlights, I think, to me, the biggest flaw of the movie, which was the indefensible choice to make the central character a new character.
Yeah.
Like, why?
Yeah.
Yep. Well, I'll tell you why, and for me, this is the worst part of the movie. The absolutely bone-crushing realization that because of the success of the MCU, this is just the way that things are going to be for media for the next 20 years. They have to create an MKU, a fucking Mortal Kombat universe, in which I'm going to get 8 movies about shit I don't care about. This is not something that we need a franchise for. Like,
no. We could have used a one, and yeah, actually, that brings up the other thing, is like, where was the damn tournament?
Like, what's the tournament?
Like, I watched the Mortal Kombat movie, and it was like the setup for the Mortal Kombat movie, right?
The good thing is you got the prequels first, so that's nice.
Right, let's just knock that out. Yeah, we were about 15 minutes into this movie, and I turned around to Holden, and I said, am I supposed to understand any part of what the fuck is going on right now? Because nothing that's happening is making a damned bit of sense.
I mean, the core plot is a relatively accurate depiction of the plot from a fighting game. So, no, it's not going to make sense.
No, yeah. No.
I mean,
yeah, they nailed that.
but yeah, it was like it was a prequel in so many ways.
It was just very bizarre. Like, the pacing was just so that opening thing with the Scorpion and Sub-Zero takes like 20 minutes.
I thought the pacing was weird too, because they would have stuff they would stretch out a lot. Like, honestly, even their training that's supposed to unlock their arcana or whatever was really kind of drawn out, considering that never was going to unlock anyone's arcana except apparently Kano. And then other scenes, it felt like they were just rushing through so fast. I don't know.
And we have this whole thing where it's such a event for Kano and Cole Young. Something, whatever that guy's name is.
Sure.
They stretch out this whole sequence where we're going to get the Arcana, and this is going to take a while, and it's this huge event and milestone and this process you have to go through. And Sonya, like, gets the mark and immediately can do her shit. Like, immediately. And not only can do it, but knows exactly how to use it.
Yeah.
Like, what is happening?
And honestly, even the part where Cole gives up and Raiden sends him home just seems like it's so sudden. Like, 15 minutes in the ring, getting your ass beat by Kano didn't do it. Guess it's time for you to give up, son.
Yeah, we had 3 days. You didn't do it in 15 minutes. We'll see you next time. Oh, okay. Then he had to pull the bullshit. Well, this was part of the plan. Ugh. fucking come on. Get the fuck out of here.
Hey, I've got glowy eyes. It's always part of the plan.
All right, Thunder God, maybe don't leave the Thunder Shell staff just sitting around.
Yeah, was that part of the plan? Maybe that was part of the plan. Like,
also, Kung Lao was always my man to play with, and I was pretty pissed when he died.
Yeah, he got taken out quick.
I actually did like the sequence where he just fucking sliced that guy in half, though.
Mm-hmm.
That was flawless victory.
Yeah.
Like, and I did appreciate those stupid one-liners. Like,
Kano wins!
Yeah.
Fucking perfect. Come on.
No, yeah, and that's the thing. Like, I absolutely live for those kind of things in a dumb movie like this, because that's what you expect, right?
Yeah. Yep.
So, you know, you sprinkle them in, you make it work. Mm-hmm. And the fatalities were pretty well done. Although I have to say, honestly, some of the CGI, like just blood spray and stuff, was embarrassingly bad.
Oh, yeah.
Embarrassingly bad. I don't know. There was a lot of bad to it. There were some highlights. There were some good fights. I enjoyed the big duel between Scorpion and Sub-Zero at the end. Though even there, the movie seemed to suffer from one thing that I think plagues a lot of fight scenes in more modern movies, which is they put the camera so close to the fight and there's so much frenetic activity that sometimes it's hard to even see the fight happening. Like the Nolan Batman movies were terrible about that kind of thing. I love those movies for the most part.
Yeah.
But
the shaky immersion cam is a cheap way to get special effects without doing special effects. But it's also really frustrating because I want to watch the fucking movie.
Yeah.
And like the tension in your action scene shouldn't be because I can't see what's happening.
Yeah. Though I think I forgive Nolan's Batman, especially the first one, more because it gave the effect of the confusion of the bad guys and that he's supposed to be this ninja. Mm. In this, it was just unforgivable that we didn't at that point, you should have just pulled out and let these guys side scroll fight against each other, you know, just lean into it. Just like the Doom movie went isometric, you know, just you know, fuck it, just do it. Why not?
What everybody's here to see.
You've made all these, you've done all the ridiculous one-liners, you did the fatalities, you did the special moves. Just do it for this fight scene. Why not? We're all this far into this goddamn movie.
Yeah.
Just do that. You don't even have to pretend that you're even doing anything creative anymore.
Uh-huh. This is not a cinematic masterpiece.
No, none of it expect it to be. If we're still watching the movie at this point, we're just fully invested on this being dumb and enjoying it.
Yeah.
What's that look for? I see you pondering.
I had a thing to... Oh, video game. Yeah, so this wasn't... I was thinking about other video game movies that I've enjoyed and what the differences were. Like, what kind of license that other video game movies took with the... I don't want to say story, but the world. And Resident Evil was good. Silent Hill was good. Get the fuck out of here, Eric. Silent Hill is great.
I haven't seen either, to be honest. I guess the first Silent Hill movie was all right.
Mm-hmm. Anything subsequent was not good.
Okay.
I really like the Warcraft movie.
I like the Warcraft movie, too. But Duncan Jones has a special place in my heart.
Same.
There is something really appealing about flying through Elwynn Forest to Stormwind. There's just something really appealing. Oh, hey, we're at Karazhan. I've been here before. Super Mario Brothers. Oh. I did enjoy Super Mario. John Leguizamo.
Oh my gosh, that is one of the original Super Mario Brothers movie is one of the worst movies ever made.
Dennis Hopper is Bowser, though.
Oh my gosh, it's so bad.
He was very Bowser. And then I ran out of the
only real iteration of a live action Super Mario Brothers is the Super Mario Brothers Super Show and we all know it.
Super Hornio Brothers.
Super Hornio Brothers. So the Super Mario Brothers Super Show was great, but I lived for the animated Legend of Zelda.
Yeah, me too. And if you go back and look at it now, it was not good.
I choose not to. In fact, good. I have a rule, Eric. You can't go back.
That's a smart rule.
You can't go back. I learned that when I went back to watch Sliders.
Ooh.
You can't go back. Just keep the memory pristine. Just keep all your fond memories of Rembrandt, the crying man Brown. Just clean and pure, because he can cry out of each eye individually. You just
I did love that show. I did love that show.
And Detective I will not Pikachu. Go back. Detective Pikachu was really good.
It really was. That was a fun movie.
That was a really fun movie. I enjoyed the Hitman movie, although I don't think it was good.
I did not see that one.
Prince of Persia: Sands of Time could have been an awesome movie if they had just done the video game, because the video game was really goddamn good.
I did not even realize they made a movie of that.
Jake Gyllenhaal is the prince.
Really?
Yeah, would not lie to you. The guy who plays, goddammit, in Coupling. The fuck is that guy's name? Steve's friend. Goddammit. What the fuck is that guy's name? Anyway, he plays the king. It's very distressing to see that guy in any kind of serious role.
So, I did not know that these people were Persian.
they are very not Persian.
I'm trying to figure out when this article was released, but Rotten Tomatoes has an editorial article that is the top 45 video game movies ranked.
I just pulled that up.
Oh, it can't be that old, because Mortal Kombat's on this list.
Like the new one?
The new one.
Oh.
It's number four.
Four?
It's number four. But they're doing this based on Rotten Tomatoes rankings.
Oh.
So that's all they're basing it on.
Oh, shit. It starts at the bottom.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah, number one is the very bottom.
Ew, what the fuck is going on here?
Well, what you have to look at is some of these movies probably didn't get a lot of people actually rating them. Like,
fair.
How many people actually critically watch these movies to rate them?
Two?
Right?
What?
You know what? I really enjoyed the Rampage movie. That movie was dumb, but I really liked it.
I did not see it. I didn't see the Sonic movie either.
Then again, I really do like The Rock.
He is very large.
Yeah, I mean, like you said, these are going by the tomato rating, so it's not like this is anyone's specific opinion.
No, no.
But, like, the fact that the first Resident Evil is honestly as low as 13, like, that's surprising to me.
Mm-hmm.
I did not realize there was a Dead or Alive movie at all. It looks like it may have been porn.
Wasn't Dead or Alive kind of like porn, though?
Yeah. I mean, you know, way to, you know, market to your audience, I guess.
God damn, Final Fantasy Spirits Within came out in 2001.
Yeah.
That is distressing. The first Resident Evil is lower than Resident Evil The Final Chapter. And that is wrong. That is not right. I don't trust this list.
This list is not a good list. Also, there are so many bad video game movies.
Yeah.
Oh.
God, I've seen so many of these Resident Evil movies. Why have I seen so many? Yeah, actually, Doom wasn't bad. I don't remember hating Doom.
I have not seen very many of these movies at all, to be honest.
I've seen about half of these movies. That is a distressing
amount of time spent on this.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I watch a lot of bad movies just in general, but
can confirm
Tony makes me watch fucking bad movies.
So for to me though, like unless it's really trying to do something different, like a Detective Pikachu, like that wasn't just a video game movie. It was actually trying to be a movie in its own right. On a ridiculous concept that is in a video game, but it wasn't like just a video game adapted to movie. But unless you're going to do something like that, then for a video game movie, really all you need to be worth seeing for fans of the video game is to give people what they want, right? Do a decent adaptation of what they see in the video game on the screen, on the big screen.
Yeah.
And that's, and like in that regard, I think this new Mortal Kombat movie succeeded on a lot of levels while making some really bizarre choices, like the main character not being from the video games, that kind of thing.
I think when you do that, you also, you're not tied to telling a story that about a character that has a bunch of lore behind it. And so you can go different directions with who that character is and what they mean.
Yeah.
True, but it's not like they didn't tie the plot of the movie into all of this immense background and lore that the other characters had anyway. I mean, Sub-Zero and Scorpion and Shang Tsung and Raiden and all that was still heavily invested in the movie's storyline. So to include then on top of that a random character who's connected to one of those lore heavy characters, I don't know, it was,
yeah, I don't know, it was just, but like, also
I honestly half expected, because I didn't know anything about this iteration going in, I half expected it to be that guy was going to become Scorpion. His family would get murdered and the spirit of Hanzo would like invest him with Hellfire or whatever and he'd become Scorpion.
Uh-huh. Yeah, also the fucking Scorpion shows up and he's like, I'm not Hanzo anymore, now I'm Scorpion. Okay, but why? One,
I mean,
you don't speak this language. Why have you picked a name in a language you don't speak? And two, why Scorpion and not like Skullfire or something? like Sub-Zero, at least for some reason, is also an English name for a language he does not speak or did not speak. But like
Scorpion. Also, Scorpion's first line when he comes back is in English.
Sure. Mm.
All right. Fair.
But so here's the thing. It's been 400 years that he's been in hell. You don't know what's happened to him down there. You know, that's going to set
an ESL course.
That's going to set up one of the later movies, The Tale of Scorpion, which will show us his journey through hell, where he gets his new name and picks up English.
I'm pretty sure The Tale of Scorpion is the hook, the dagger on the rope.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure that's what that is. But it's still very dumb. Yeah, so, but what I think, like, Detective Pikachu does something really clever in, like, in Pokemon, you get, like, this glimpse of the world, and just, like, the movie by itself is alright, but just being able to see the Pokemon world, like, really logistically on the screen, where you're like, Pokemon are such a major integral part of this society, but you don't really ever see that in the game, it's just seeing it... itself was incredible. And like, you know, Ryan Reynolds is always funny.
Yeah, I have zero experience with Pokemon. None. Like,
it's not, you probably got the gist.
Yeah. I watched the movie and enjoyed the shit out of it because it was just a fun movie.
Mm-hmm.
I have forgotten so much more about Mortal Kombat than I think I've ever known. And I enjoyed this movie. It wasn't good, but I enjoyed it. If it tried to be better, I would not have enjoyed it as much as I did.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's a fact.
It knew what it was doing. It set an expectation before I ever set foot in the theater, and it met that. We're going to have an R-rated video game movie. Okay. Well, I better see some blood. I better hear swearing. Let's lean into the ridiculousness of it. And it did.
You'd better not understand why Raiden can't teleport everybody to the temple.
Oh, the logistics of the movie broke down within the first couple of minutes.
We went and got Jax. I was literally there 5 minutes before you got Jax.
Yeah.
And what, now you've already got studs in his arms.
Yeah,
and...
like what the fuck?
Right.
Well, but you've got an immortal teleporting god, so I guess, you know,
So why did he need to drive cross country then?
Yeah.
Why not just yoink him right then?
Or
you
fly.
You knew he had the mark since birth. Why go through all this garbage?
Fly and then parachute and then walk across the desert. Like, what is going on? Then you become like the teleport, like the Star Trek teleporter later in the movie. It's like, oh, could you just teleport anybody anywhere? That's what I expected. I would have respected the movie quite a bit if the guy had said, then why did we have to walk here?
Right.
So I agree that trying too hard, it would be more of a failure. I think didn't like this as much as the original Mortal Kombat movie. Part of it comes from, I think that's exactly what the original Mortal Kombat movie really embraced, was it did exactly what you expected it to do and absolutely no more than that. Whereas this one occasionally tried a little bit to raise the bar, and that's where it failed. Yeah. trying to do some interesting pacing, trying to add a new story with a new character that no one cares about, trying to make some sense of the plot threads was where, and slowing the movie down was where it falls down. And in fairness, it had an impossible, if I was going to compare it to the original Mortal Kombat movie, it had an impossible standard to live up to, not in the least because I wasn't going to get to see this in a theater, but the manner in which I saw this. So the first Mortal Kombat movie came out in August of 1995. That was the autumn after my graduation from high school. So I graduated from high school in spring of 95. So this movie came out as I'm riding the high of being done with high school, like a week before I'm going to move to college. I go out with my boys from that time for like the last time before I move off to college. We go see on opening night at the Esquire Theater, which was one of those big event theaters back in the day in St. Louis. Yep. We see Mortal Kombat. Oh. And I go with this buddy of mine, Curtis, who is one of those guys you just have to know him. He's one of those guys that makes any event more entertaining just by being there with him. Uh-huh. He's got that energy. Uh-huh. Yeah. We get to the movie actually running late. We're coming down the aisle as the previews are wrapping up. And we're like, hushed on, like, all right, find an open spot, because it's packed in there, right? Uh-huh. We're like, find an open spot. And then through the speakers, suddenly the Mortal Kombat music just bop, 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 bop. And Curtis just grabs my shoulder and like throws me into an open seat that is just material. I assume it was open. It materialized. It's like, sit down. And the whole movie, the whole ride was a trip like that. You just can't replicate that. You know, it's an impossible standard, but it did. It was exactly what it wanted to be. And this movie tried a little too hard. And actually the theme song, I think, reflects it beautifully. After the movie, I listened to the theme song, the Mortal Kombat music from this one, and then the original, the Immortals theme track from the original Mortal Kombat. And the original one is just such a pure, absurd techno theme with all the lines from the video game rolled in through it. And the new one takes that and then, I don't know, like tries to class it up. Mm-hmm. And it loses something because of
it. No, I agree with that completely. I didn't feel anything, Eric.
I have no nostalgia for the video game or for the first movie. It came out when I was 24, and it was probably just one of those movies I saw on like a Friday or Saturday night when the girl I was dating was doing something else. This was before I met Julie. I honestly, for the life of me, cannot tell you any part of the memory of seeing this movie. I know I saw it. I know I saw it in the theater. Mm-hmm. I have no recollection of doing so, though. Unlike when I went to see Batman in the theater, because it was kind of a similar situation. It was a couple of weeks after I graduated high school. You know, I have very, very vivid memories of that experience. Just because there was a kind of an event behind it, you know. And for me, this was just another movie to watch on a boring night. and like, I very seldom played the video game. It wasn't my style. Fighting games still aren't my style of video game. So I just, you know.
And I mean, so many of the most powerful movie memories, and we talked about this weeks ago, so many of the most powerful movie memories you're going to have are completely contextual, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. For me, you know, for me, this is all about an expectation. They set it. It met it. It didn't exceed it by any stretch. But I didn't
work with. It was fine.
Yeah.
But
it makes me hope for an eventual Tekken universe.
You know, I think another reason that they didn't they introduced a new character as the main protagonist was they didn't want to polarize their audience. Because
everybody's got a favorite character.
Everyone's got a favorite character, and I swear to God, as soon as they introduced Johnny Cage as who the next thing is going to be, I'm like, fuck that guy. Fuck Johnny Cage.
Oh, Johnny Cage is great. What are you talking about?
No, Johnny Cage sucks the big one. He sucks almost as much as Liu Kang, which I fucking hate. I hate Liu Kang too.
That was the biggest problem this movie had was a significant lack of dick punching.
There was a significant amount of sweeping the leg, which
that was fucking ridiculous and hilarious.
That was very funny.
One of my favorite scenes in the movie, honestly, because I could like literally see the guy playing Liu Kang just constantly hitting that move over and over again. Get Kano. Jump. Oh, shit.
Yeah, Holden told me that, oh, I keep seeing this scene where they keep sweeping Kano's leg, and I'm like, you know what? I don't know what Kano it means. And and you know what? I have not even seen a trailer for this movie, so why are you spoiling the shit? Mm-hmm. He's like, but they just keep sweeping the leg. And he goes, I don't know if they just edited something together to make it look like that or if this really happens in the movie. And then it happened. I was like, yep, that happened. And that's pretty fucking funny.
Also, as
it's very meta for a video game.
As predicted, that goddamn scene where Sub-Zero turns the blood into ice and then stabs Scorpion with it was fucking awesome.
That was
fucking awesome.
I did love, you know, making Sub-Zero like the big scary monster of the movie. I thought that was handled great because I am a huge Sub-Zero fan. That's one of my guys from the old school Mortal Kombat stuff, and making him this just terrorizing threat. The way they described him when they were saying, all right, we're going to pair you off with this guy and you off with this guy and you off with this guy. All right, who's taking Sub-Zero? Oh, no one. None of us can take Sub-Zero one-on-one.
Yeah, that's group effort.
We going to team up on him. I loved all that stuff. I think they built him up as the threat really, really well. Uh-huh. And then agreed. The payoff was worth it.
Yeah. What I found interesting and not being... you know, having any buy into any of this, I looked up because I wasn't sure about the character who was the main character in the movie. So I looked them up. I looked it up. And as far as the list of the video game characters, and what surprised me was how many of the characters actually came from the Mortal Kombat 2 video game. Like most of them were not in the original game, but most of them came from Mortal Kombat 2, which, I mean, I remember at the time that when it came out that they just expanded, like it had so many more characters in that game than in the first one.
That's very common for old fighting game franchises.
Oh, yeah.
If you go back and look at the original rosters of like their first iterations, they're tiny.
Yes.
And then the second game is where they really blow up. So like Tekken, Virtua Fighter, Mortal Kombat, Street Fighter, a lot of big name famous characters in these franchises don't get invented until the second or third or whatever iteration.
Right. Yeah.
It looks
again,
like
it's been a billion years since I was at the youth center on base plunking my quarters into those video games. But yeah, I remember like the Virtua Fighter and Street Fighter. I don't recall that they had Mortal Kombat or would have, just because I know at the time even Mortal Kombat was a different caliber of game, and also, like it was, you know, it was more bloody.
There was controversy.
Yeah.
Mortal Kombat was a controversy magnet.
Uh-huh. Yep.
It looks like Johnny Cage was the only character from Mortal Kombat, the original Mortal Kombat, that wasn't in the movie.
That sounds right from what I saw.
It was the Outworlds guys that there were a lot from the second one, because the first one, the first game was more like focused on like Earth and the fighters there. And the second one was where they introduced a lot of that, like, you know, invaders from another dimension shtick.
Uh-huh. Yep.
So Melina and shoot, hat guy.
Yeah.
Kung Lao.
Now that I'm looking at it, I would never have played Mortal Kombat in the theater or in the coin op game when I was at that point in my life, just because it came out. Jesus, it came out when I was 21.
We cannot help that you are so old, Tony.
I am old. It would have been the games that came out in the mid 80s that I would have been playing there.
I'm the middle child here. It's weird for me.
You're not the old man anymore.
Yeah, really.
Yeah, that's like until recently at the Garden, I was one of the younger ones, which is really strange for the IT department. I was one of the younger ones, which before that in an IT department, I was normally on the older side.
Did you say you're not really a big fighting game guy anyway?
Yeah. I mean, I played some, you know, just because it was the games we had. And I've tried to play them and just never got real into them. I did play through Injustice, but that was more because of the property, the license, the IP. I played a little bit of Injustice 2 when Holden bought it, because like, I'm not buying another one of these games. It's not for me. And he's like, I got money, I'll buy it. Okay, you go right ahead. I'll play it when you buy it.
Hey, the thing about those games is that you can just go to YouTube and watch all the story things, and they skip the fights.
Well, and that's what he does now. Like, he knows so much of those, like, he watches so many video games that way, where he just watches all the cutscenes on YouTube. So he knows the story of so many of them.
I will say that I think both Injustice games are actually built on the like modern Mortal Kombat engine. A number of years ago, they rebooted the Mortal Kombat video game franchise. Like the old version of the franchise had gotten to a point where they actually like ended the universe or whatever, and did this thing where Raiden basically created an alternative timeline, and they used that as a reboot for the franchise. They did kind of a really meta thing, and the Mortal Kombat like 9 or whatever started over the storyline with kind of a new spin on a lot of the what happened on modern gen platforms, and they're pretty good. Like I'd actually, if anyone is into those types of games, the newer Mortal Kombat games are really good adaptations and tell some interesting stories for fighting games. Just watch YouTube videos.
Yeah, I honestly enjoyed the story of Injustice, just because it took such a different take on some of those characters. Then when they started releasing comic books, I've read every Injustice comic book that's come out. Also because Tom Taylor is an amazing writer. And like he did some really great things about explaining like this ridiculous setup in a way that like, all right, I'm in. I buy the story that sets this up where Superman's the bad guy. And it's a hard sell for you to tell me that Superman's the bad guy. But the way they did it in that story, it's like, all right, I'm in, because you're going to give me that premise and say this is where it launches from. Okay, let's keep going.
I think I watched the Injustice 2 cutscenes, and then Superman is in prison, and I'm like, I have no context for this.
Yeah, Superman is the big bad, and he becomes a dictator. Basically, becomes a dictator, and he does that because the Joker uses kryptonite-laced scarecrow gas to make him believe that pregnant Lois Lane is Doomsday, and he punches a hole through her. Superman punches a hole through Lois Lane as he's flying her into outer space. And that's when he realized, like, he comes to and it just breaks him. It's like, okay.
Yeah, and that's I mean, the with a slightly less gruesome graphic spin on it, that's basically how the old Justice League cartoon set up how Superman goes bad in the universe where they're the Injustice League. And that itself is based on very similar events for how the old comic books did a storyline like that. I mean, you know, it's a rehash of a rehash of a rehash.
Yep.
Like just about anything in mainstream comics, but it's a decently told story. I think for me, it's less that you have to do a lot of work to convince me that Superman could go dark or authoritarian or whatever, and more that there are so many properties that seem to have taken him that direction in the last, you know, couple of decades, I guess, that it's I almost get exhausted by it, and I'm more interested in can we see a story that's actually a good story about Superman being the good guy?
Yeah, there are a lot of good ones out there where he is. Dark Knight Returns, like, it put a really bad taste in my mouth for the Superman as a bad guy stories.
Yeah.
There are good versions of it though, where like Red Son. I really like Red Son. That's a well done story. But just taking the Superman we know and love and just saying, "Oh, well, he's Superman, so he's authoritarian, but Batman is the good guy." It's like, wait a minute.
The guy.
If anybody's going to end up authoritarian, it's going to be Batman. It's going to be the rich guy, and not the journalist. You know,
the billionaire who breaks street robbers' arms on a regular basis is the one who's fighting against authoritarianism.
Yeah.
Instead of solving crime and homelessness with his money.
Right.
Yeah. Honestly, that I think was what Kingdom Come did a much better job of doing. If you've read the Kingdom Come series, is in that one. I mean, Superman does, for various reasons, wind up kind of going the over authoritarian route for a while. But at the same time, Batman was there the whole time. Like, in that future version of Gotham, there are literally automated Batman robots patrolling the whole city, keeping crime down. I mean, So, yeah, you know what, Adam, or David, I did not think when watching the movie today about that this is going to try and set up an MCU-style franchise, but you are 100% right. That is exactly what this movie was designed to do. Yep. And it is a little exhausting that every movie with the possibility of a franchise is doing that.
Every movie set in any world that has an established backstory is now going to set up a universe where we have to have multiple movies in it. Why? Because Avengers Endgame pulled in like $1.5 billion.
Well, I mean, we've been doing that for a lot longer than that. Look at how many fucking James Bond movies there have been.
Sure.
I mean, you have a property that works and you just keep going back to it.
Yeah, but the MCU is different, I think. The MCU feels different because it is coordinated on a scale that no other franchise has done.
And the ones that try to replicate it don't seem to get
what is both, attractive about it. Yeah.
Both what makes it work and also how much effort had to be put into building it up from the ground. Mm-hmm. Like all these franchises that want, you know, DC rushed Justice League. Other franchises want to jump right into the big movie right away. And it's like, man, the MCU was putting out solo films for 10 years before Avengers came out.
Start with Iron Man, man. You got to start with your Iron Man. Then you got to follow up with an Iron Man 2.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you don't make everyone care about both the characters that you're going to have teaming up and the world that they inhabit with multiple movies, then it's going to fall flat.
Well, and you have to have strong enough characters that you can tell a single character story. I don't think you're going to get that with something like Mortal Kombat.
It's so one-dimensional.
You could, but it would be really tough to get people to care that much about three or four individual characters that you're going to give them one or two movies a piece before you get Mortal Kombat.
I mean, yeah. I don't give a shit about Iron Man.
Yeah, I mean, I
just like comics. Iron Man was a good movie.
It was.
But you know what? You could have given me a Scorpion and Sub-Zero movie just based on the stuff that we had in this. You could have given me a movie that led up to Scorpion busting out of hell. And then that story. Then give me a story with Jax and Kano and Sonya Blade. I mean, there's enough there that you can tell a story.
And you could even do it like how the MCU does it, where different franchises have a kind of different, almost a different genre feel to them.
Yeah.
So you could have had a classic, like Kurosawa-esque samurai film with Sub-Zero and Scorpion. I would watch the shit out of that.
Would also watch the shit
100%. Like that was the most interesting part of the movie. That first 10 minutes, like, I didn't know what the hell was going on, but I was invested.
And then
invested in that.
And then a fucking buddy cop comedy with Sonya and Jax chasing Kano around the world, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
That would be awesome.
Buddy cop, where in the world is Kano San Diego?
Well, I'm thinking of something along the lines of, what is it, like Lethal Weapon 3, where they pick up Joe Pesci?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, I absolutely think something like Joe that could have... I absolutely think something like that could have worked, where you set up multiple characters with their own individual films and their own individual styles before having the Mortal Kombat that actually does the tournament. Mm-hmm. I also think that the chance of selling that idea to a studio to finance
is non-existent.
It does not exist.
No.
Yeah. Which is a shame, but.
I mean, the only way that works at this point is you make a movie like this and then you go back and tell individual stories, but the stories are already over for most of the characters.
Yeah, you've already kind of blown your shot at that point.
When you've killed most of the characters in the movie, I mean, granted, they've killed them, but they also said, well, death is meaningless.
A portal. Death is only another portal.
Oh, fuck. That is not what I want to hear. I hate that shit. This is comic book territory, and I hate that shit. When someone dies, I want them to stay fucking dead.
Well, I'm sorry. But only your guy is going to stay dead because his soul
only my guy is going to stay dead. Fuck Kung Lao.
When he gets soul consumed.
Fucking Shang Tsung.
Who, again, cast very well, but also, again, impossible to live up to the original. Because the original Shang Tsung is one of the greatest of all time.
Are you implying that the original Shang Tsung is James Hong?
No, it's...
Good, because I don't think that he was.
No, it's Cary Tagawa.
I really wish it would have been James Hong.
But, I mean, also, Christopher Lambert was Raiden.
Yeah, okay, so the casting of Raiden obviously took a step back in this new movie. I can't say that wasn't an improvement, sure.
So, out of curiosity, Holden kept trying to place the voice of Cabal, and he kept telling me it was somebody, and I was like, that's not right. Fuck, who was he trying to say it was? Oh, he was trying to say it was Pedro Pascal. I'm like, no, it's not. And he's like, oh, it sounds like it. And it was just the first line. I'm like, no, that's not him. Turns out it's the same dude that played fucking Charles Manson in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Yeah, I looked that guy up because I also thought that his voice sounded super familiar to me. I'm like, fuck, I know I've heard this guy before, but
was just putting on a voice, it turns out.
Yeah, it was definitely not that.
Oh, wow, there actually was a live-action Tekken movie in 2009. I'll bet that was terrible.
That guy who voiced Cabal was in a movie called Nude Tuesday.
Not quite as high watermark, I'm sure, as what was the movie that half the women from
just where is this going?
last week's movie, there was some really sketchy sounding TV series
God damn it. Alison Brie was in it.
Hot Sluts?
Hot Sluts,
that was it. That guy played Charles Manson in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Yeah.
He also played Charles Manson in Mindhunter.
I know. Well, in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, he was only ever referred to as Charlie. They never called him Charles Manson. But yeah, that was him. Same guy. So that was your homework assignment for the week. How was Hot Sluts, by the way?
I did not watch it because, as you might expect, I forgot about it immediately.
As expected.
Yeah.
And no one's surprised. Disappointed, but not surprised.
I did finish Falcon and Winter Soldier.
Yeah.
Because that finished.
Yep.
And the ending was acceptable.
I really liked the ending.
I liked that they changed the title at the end.
I did too. I thought that was that was a really nice moment.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I enjoyed it. I really liked that the title changed too. I thought that was a nice kind of way to show the growth that they were doing. The entire series existed for exactly that, obviously.
Yep.
I found myself having to fight against being
we are in the spoiler zone!
Because, you know what? We can't spoil Mortal Kombat. Honestly, it's Mortal Kombat. But we're spoiling the fuck out of Falcon and Winter Soldier right now.
I had to fight back against a certain amount of ingrained, cynicism, I guess, in that I've gotten so depressed with how the American public reacts to anything. As a whole, as a group, that when Falcon's giving his, and politicians and what motivates them, that when Falcon gives his big speech on camera, I'm like, yeah, but this isn't going to change anything. No one's going to actually change any action they're going to take based on what a guy says on camera to them. Politicians do not feel shame. Come on. But okay, it's a comic book universe. I'll accept that one guy's impressive speech as Captain America can make a difference.
So my pet theory about that speech is that, do you know exactly what the problem was with the GRC? You know, Carly has a problem with it, and it has something to do with relocating people, but they're very non-specific about what the problem actually is. They're like, well, people live in their homes. Are they going to be displaced? And then you expect any kind of answer, but you never get an answer as to exactly what they're voting on or what they're doing. It's just bad enough for Carly to kill people. And that seems very weird to then have a very overdramatic speech about you need to do better than...
than the thing that you're doing, the thing that we're not going to specify.
That we're not exactly
sure. We're not
sure.
Going to specify because we don't want to piss off either the conservative or the liberal branches of our audience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the flag.
We're going to let you figure
antique-ish.
Out. Yeah, we're going to we're going to let you figure out who the bad guys are.
Yeah, you're just going to fill in the blank for whatever bad guy you want here.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, in our group chat, I think it was said best when Carly's group, the Flag Smashers, was likened to what conservative media fears Antifa to be.
Yeah.
It's not what they are, but that's what they fear Antifa is.
Yeah, it's like, hey,
super
we've
soldiers.
Actually we're people with a very
turns
legitimate,
out.
We're people with a very legitimate beef and want to bring to everyone's attention a very significant thing that's being handled badly by governments and corporations. And, oh, wait, we're also supposed to be the bad guys? Let's blow some places up with random people in it. You know, because why not?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, the Super Soldier Serum is clearly the vaccine. Come on. Oh,
I thought it was just a metaphor for 5G.
I like that we touched enough on the race stuff to, like, whet your appetite for it, but made no significant statement with it. That also feels like you got to play your audience, because your audience is going to accept a certain amount of stuff.
Yeah, it felt like they tiptoed right up to the line of making some actual bold artistic statements about race in America, and then never quite were willing to go all the way with it.
Mm-hmm. They gave that guy a statue, though.
Oh my God! Okay,
Listen, I like that they gave him a statue.
I did,
but
too.
But also, historical statues have a certain context today that makes it a bit awkward.
Except that they did it the right way and they put it in a museum.
Mm-hmm.
So
they didn't put it in a park.
So he surprised him with a statue and a monument when the guy had explicitly said nothing but this is exactly what I don't want to happen to me. And it happened like in a week in the Smithsonian. Like I had a lot of questions about that scene.
Yeah, that scene was very awkward because the guy's like, no self-respecting black man wants to be Captain America because this country shit me out and it's been doing this to black people the entire time. Here's a statue in a museum for you. I feel like you heard some of what I said, but didn't understand any of it.
I don't know. I took that all in a completely different way. Because I took that to mean that his story was never told, and this is the way that his story could be told. And it wasn't as much about the statue as it was about the story that was told.
Yeah, but it feels, because we don't actually get to see most of the writing in the room, my guess is that there's a significant portion of that story that was actually left out of what was on that wall.
Like did we actually...
The 40 years in jail.
Did we actually talk about how it was the U.S. government effectively experimenting on this guy while he's in prison?
There was some of that on there. There was some of that on the plaque. I didn't pause it to read it all, but it talked about how the Tuskegee Airmen were part of it, and the experimentation that was done on there was stuff there.
I don't know. I came away from that scene feeling really weird about it for a number of reasons, but overall, if that was the low point, especially of the finale, I think that's fine. It was a fun watch. It did the job. Again, it did what it set out to do, right? It gave us the context for Sam becoming Captain America and really accepting that mantle. His suit is great. I love his Falcon America suit.
It looks nice. It looks really nice. It's nice. Very sharp.
The aside from the audience of, hey, it's the Black Falcon. No, that's Captain America was maybe a little on the nose.
I was
fine with that.
But that's the way all these movies are.
I was fine with that.
I like the Bucky storyline. I enjoyed that. I do like that he's basically in court mandated therapy. And then he just drops off the notebook and he's like, all right, I'm done. Thanks.
Well, to be fair, his therapist is atrociously bad. So
she is very bad.
She's bad at her job.
You know, I think what we also establish is that in the MCU, court mandated anything only lasts as long as I don't want to anymore. Because all of John Walker's stuff were contingent on him never being Captain America again. Like literally that was the last thing they said as he walks out of the room. And then the next public sighting of him is in full Captain America regalia with his own handmade shield. But also, I guess that gets forgiven when you save a bus full of people.
Yeah. Would be arresting you otherwise.
Right.
It does seem really weird that he did murder a dude on camera and there were no consequences.
Well, American, though.
But wait, also, he was kind of a cop.
Yeah, I get it, Tony.
Also, he, you know, he's a soldier.
And they ignore the testimony, right?
Yeah, they ignore the fact that through a lot of the Captain America movies specifically, he's just murdering people all over the place.
No, no, I'm fine with that. But that guy is prone and has given up.
Yeah.
And it is a straight execution.
Oh, yeah.
Like, but also completely on video and camera. Like, there is absolutely, it is borderline a war crime. Right? Like, I have no idea how they got him out of the country. Right? Like, I don't know how you hold Captain America, I guess, but also just seems like there should have been, you know, something.
Yeah, I mean, I would, obviously, he got tossed out because of that. Like, that was his consequence. But
okay.
the fact that there wasn't more, I think, would boil down to, well, we can't actually convict Captain America of murder. That wouldn't play well. So, well,
maybe that's what we need.
I actually thought the John Walker storyline was one of the most interesting parts of the whole series.
I thought it was rushed, but I did like it.
I mean, it was, and in a series as short as this one, it was going to be, right?
Yep.
But for what they were allowed to do, I thought it was done pretty well. And I really liked that at the end, he does grab the van rather than chase after the,
Carly.
Carly.
Yeah.
As Monica said, okay, he gets to be Captain America for 10 seconds. That was a good moment for the character. It was good stuff.
I like the US agent idea. Like I've always liked that that idea in the comics, and I'm curious to see how they're going to play with it going forward.
Well, especially since we really don't have any context on what the lady from Seinfeld,
Dreyfus.
Yeah, like what is her actual like credentials in that universe? Where is she getting the authority to do what she's doing?
Yeah, I mean, in the comic books, she's Madam Hydra. That right. character is Madam Hydra, but they don't seem to be making that connection here
yet.
Right. Yeah. At this point,
though, given that there's going to be a Captain America 4 now. It seems like an obvious setup for, they like Hydra subplots or main plots for their Captain America movies.
Yeah, well, the other thing that I've read is that Julia Louis-Dreyfus is in the Black Widow movie. Like, that character appears in the Black Widow movie, and that movie was supposed to come out before Falcon and Winter Soldier, so we should have seen her character already.
That actually would make some sense, because they introduce her like you're supposed to know, and not just from being a comic nerd and recognizing the name, but supposed to know who this person is.
Right. But because of how things have been kind of twisted up in the release schedules, that caused a problem. And like I told Holden, because of the way that John Walker was brought in as Captain America, but then Steve came back and kind of took the shield back from him, forcing him to become U.S. agent. I said, wouldn't it have been interesting if Steve was one of the ones that had blipped away, and we have this storyline 5 years later where they've replaced him and it's John Walker, and then he comes back.
And it's like, oh, this guy is not living up to my standard.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, I mean, we're not going to do that in the MCU as it stands because of the way those stories had to be told. Happened. Yeah. But I just thought that would have been an interesting take on it. I would have liked to have seen a little more time with John Walker as Captain America, being a good Captain America before the turn happens, when he feels like it felt like he was Captain America for about 3 weeks and then felt this ridiculous sense of entitlement toward the name and the shield that just didn't feel earned, considering some of the other stuff that they did lean into him earning. You know, it just just seemed weird. But
like
that's
you said, it was
compression of the storylines.
Yeah.
The other thing they didn't do a great job with this is like taking a step back from this. These six episodes, there was this all didn't happen just in like a week or two. Like there was, it felt like there was a much longer span of time that took place between the travel and some of the stuff that happened. Like it felt like there was at times like a week or two between some of the episodes. And then that fifth episode could have taken place over a month or two when they were grounded and he's practicing and like,
there, and there's and not his a contacts are digging up dirt and doing investigation off camera.
Yeah. Like they don't give us a good sense of exactly how long this took. And I think that's one of the things that WandaVision did a little bit better job of really establishing what timeline we were looking at. Like every decade in terms of the sitcom was a day in their world. The stuff advanced very quickly. Once they were at the hex, and each episode was basically a day, like except for the flashback, most of that series takes place in less than a week. Where I think Falcon and Winter Soldier takes considerably longer.
Yeah, I didn't have a good sense of the timing either.
Especially when Bucky says, "Hey, I've got one more favor to ask." Then he shows up with the Falcon suit, like. Wakanda's pretty advanced, but
they didn't just 3D print that overnight or anything.
Yeah.
I don't know that.
Or they did.
Shuri's pretty badass.
Shuri is very good at her job, you know.
They're going to get to the point though where they've advanced the technology so far in that world that it's not going to start working against them. Like,
yeah.
Well, why don't we have Falcon suits all over the goddamn place?
Yeah. Like Tony said, at some point there's a certain amount of comic book logic that comes into play, that why isn't this miracle technology readily available in mass production? And the answer is comic book tech.
Why aren't we colonizing other planets?
Hey, just wait till Reed Richards shows up and unstable molecules are introduced.
Hell yeah, sign me up. I cannot wait for some Fantastic Four. And in terms of the TV shows, I mean, I liked WandaVision. I had fun with Winter Soldier. I guess a couple of months still away, but sign me up for Loki.
I'm worried about Loki.
Really?
I am.
I think his can carry it regardless of what else they do.
I
think it's going to be a fine show. I think it's going to matter even less to the MCU than these other two movies have. And they don't matter a whole lot to the movie versions.
You mean in terms of consequential changes to the fiction that we'll see played out in later movies?
Correct.
Sure. I would tend to agree, but honestly, I kind of don't care. Like, I mean, you know, it's always fun to see the ripples of one thing lead into another on the big screen, but I enjoyed WandaVision completely in its own bubble, and the same for Falcon and the Winter Soldier, and I'm really willing to go that way for Loki. Like, I am happy to just watch Tom Hiddleston fuck with time for 6 or 8 weeks or however long it's going to last.
Yeah. He's not even in the same universe as them now.
No, he's not. Though that does make me look forward to What If. I really want to see What If. I'm such a fan of the old comic book series. I really want to see what they do with the cartoon.
Some of the most classic Marvel storylines from me growing up came out of What If. Yeah.
Yep. What If Aunt May Was a Herald of Galactus? It's still one of my favorites. It's so ridiculous. It's so stupid.
Yeah, I think there were some ridiculous ones, and there were some really poignant ones too. Like, I think there was one about, like, what if Dark Phoenix didn't die?
Yeah.
And it went to some really, really dark places, but in a really interesting way. And I just always enjoy that they got to explore stories that they wouldn't want to commit to in the main timeline.
Yeah.
You know, and this is in an era when the idea of doing, hey, let's just launch a whole branch of comics in an alternate timeline wasn't really something they could do the way, you know, now. We'll just make an Ultimates line, whatever.
Yeah, I mean, at the time, Marvel prided itself on being one continuous story.
Yeah.
That there weren't any reboots, that there weren't any...
They didn't have to do a Crisis on Infinite Earths to clean up their shit.
No, they didn't. And in fact, they were, I mean, that was a point of pride for them.
Yep.
Now it almost feels like they need to. Like I tried to go back and read some X-Men books recently with some relaunch stuff. I'm like, I can't even do it. Like it's unrecognizable to me.
And impenetrable. It's so dependent on so much backstory now.
Yep. Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, one of the nice things about DC is they do kind of reboot every few years. And all right, well, it's a new point to either jump on or jump off.
Off.
Yeah, but you hate good things, so.
That's very true. You know what else is really good that I've been watching? Fucking Invincible.
Oh, man. That's wonderful.
It's really goddamn good.
It's really good.
I need to hop on that train.
Yeah, yep. you do need to hop on that train.
You do.
Have you read the comics?
I own the first like super mega collection, but I haven't actually read it yet.
Well, watch that first episode before you do.
Yeah, I really enjoy that. And what's really hilarious to me is the look of Omni-Man. Like, I saw that character and heard that voice, and it's like, God damn it, that's the perfect voice.
Yep.
For that look. Like, yep. it looks like him.
It's J.K. Simmons.
It is J.K. Simmons. And it's, imagine Mr. Fantastic with a 70s mustache.
Yeah. Oh. Yeah, Mr. Ooh. Fantastic, but it's Freddie Mercury.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's like, you look at that, and you can only imagine the voice coming out of that face to be J.K. Simmons' voice, and it's perfect.
And then it is.
It just is. It's perfect.
Yeah. There's a lot of great voice acting talent in that show.
There really is. The voice acting talent throughout is really great.
I will watch that show in the fairly near future. I'm pretty confident here because my Tuesday gaming group is just about on the threshold of switching over to a new campaign, and I'm going to be running an Aberrant campaign, which is a superhero role playing system that's kind of set in a bit of a more semi-realistic idea of what would happen if people with superpowers really showed up. And so there's a very dark aspect to it. So it's something like an Invincible would be a good plate of ideas or a good way to get my right self in the right headspace.
Yep. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. That, and if you're not familiar with it, the Wild Cards series of novels.
Oh man, I back in the day I read a bunch of those. One of the big name old school authors wrote the, was it Robert Jordan who wrote those or
no? It was he was the editor of them, and it was George R. R. Martin.
George R. R. Martin, that's right. I knew it was one of those big guys.
He was the editor of the line. And they got just a ton of different people to write for them, right. Including some comic book writers at the time too. Claremont wrote a couple stories for them in there, and yep. And that's some weird fucked up shit. Like Fortunato, who his powers are based on tantric sex, and like the more he holds back from having an orgasm, the more powerful he is. But when he shoots his load, God only knows what happens. Like, and God help the person he shoots it into, because that like gives them power. Yeah. Like he can, like they theorized he could, I think they theorized, I don't remember if they went through with it, but he could raise the dead.
What the fuck is
it is bizarre. It is so fucking weird. The sleeper who every time he sleeps, he wakes up with a new power, and he doesn't know if one of the times he's going to wake up and just have a power that will mutate him to the point of death. So he is a hardcore speed addict, so he doesn't sleep for like weeks at a time. It is the weirdest bunch of bullshit. But yeah, it's Jesus. One of those things those, where they really leaned into the realistic, what would happen if superpowers were real kind of thing.
Those books have been coming out forever. I didn't realize they were still making them, but apparently they are.
Yep, they are.
But they've been coming out, like the first collection came out in 87. So this is old stuff.
Yeah, I was reading them as they came out there for a while. I got out of them, but yeah, I was way into those for a number of years.
Yeah, I remember reading a bunch of them that the bookstore at my college town sold back in the day. Yeah, wow, they really do have a smorgasbord of authors on here, don't they?
Yeah, they do. And then they, in later years, they started doing single author novels, where they just kind of leaned into one storyline for a novel length story. Hmm. Once they got past establishing the world and the various timelines and stuff, because they do have stories that were set, like at the time they had stories that were set in the 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s. I mean, because that was modern when the book came out, was in the 80s. So,
all right. So I've got to catch up on Invincible, and I keep being told I have to watch The Boys too.
You haven't seen The Boys?
No, I haven't seen
The Boys. Damn it, Eric. What the fuck are you doing over there?
Just jacking off. I don't know. It's a lot of self pleasure during the
13 months.
Time to enjoy some comic book fiction now.
Yeah, obviously.
Yeah, watch that first, what, 5 minutes of The Boys?
Yeah.
The first couple of minutes of The Boys, you'll get the entire tone for the series.
Well, just from context, I know like the main face for that series, the Homelander guy, is very, very much, there's, so Aberrant's actually a reboot of an old White Wolf property that was their entry into the superhero role-playing game genre back in like the late 90s. And they had a very, very similar character to what I've seen Homelander kind of represent, that sort of Superman, except without any of the holding back that Superman has, kind of just a dick about it. Like, he is literally the most powerful being on the planet and he knows it, type of guy. There was an exact duplicate of that character in that setting. So
yeah, The Boys has a super team that is it's a analog for the Justice League, and Homelander's very much that Superman character. There's a comic strip I've seen a number of times that has Superman holding up Homelander in one hand and Brightburn in the other, and the speech bubble is somehow I felt responsible for you two. Yeah. All right. So next week we will talk about Nomadland.
Nomadland.
Sure, we'll lower the bar from this week if we have to. Yeah. Sure.
And
Best Picture, and Frances McDormand won Best Actress.
And I believe Lana said she's already seen it. So. That should make it easier for her to come back next week.
No excuse.
All right. We'll catch you guys later. Yep.